You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
We don't think twice about locking our front doors at night, right? Or setting an alarm before leaving the house. But here's the truth. For many remote workers, their front door is wide open and it's their laptop. Imagine this. You're working from your favorite coffee shop. You hit send on a client proposal worth millions. And before it reaches the inbox, it's intercepted. Or worse, a hacker sneaks into your Zoom call, recording confidential discussions you thought were private. Remote work has given us freedom, but it has also handed criminals a brand new playground. And the scariest part? Most of us are making it way too easy for them. Tonight, I'm joined by Muyowa Mudemwa, a man who knows exactly how these cyber criminals operate, and more importantly, how you can stop them. Muyowa, good evening.
Evening, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. How about you?
I am fine.
Let's throw you into the deep end quickly before we put you back into the kiddies pool. What's the scariest real life case you've seen of someone working remotely and being hacked?
So, that's quite a lot. So I think maybe the one interesting one that I've seen is so there was this lady. Mm. And she gets a call from her CEO, and she felt, yo, today is really one of those days where I get to interact with the CEO. Mm. So she gets a call from her CEO, and the CEO says to her, hey, listen, I need you to come to a meeting with me, and I'll send you the link. And that was the end of the call. So he sends her a Outlook link. Mm-hmm. And 30 minutes later, she's in a meeting and he introduces her to some business partners that the company is thinking of working with. Mm. And she feels a little bit like, you know, status, maemo, no? Mm. You know, Setswana says maemo. So I like that word. She's beginning to think she's moving somewhere in this company because, you know, the CEO has attention for her.
Yeah.
And in this call, she can see, you know, these business partners, they introduce themselves, they introduce what they're doing. Mm. And then the CEO then takes over and explains to her the whole idea behind the case. Mm-hmm. So this lady is left with such an awe. Who is she, you know, amongst all the employees in the company to be getting this audience? And the CEO then says to her, look, we're working on something. And I wanted you to be one of the first people to actually, you know, be part of this thing so that when it comes out to the rest of the company, I want you to put your name on this thing so that we can announce that you were one of the people, you know, who was the foundation of this thing. Mm. And so she's wowed, you know, it's a wine and dine kind of a thing. Mm. And so what happens is he then instructs her to make some financial payments to these investors, you know, as part of their trip to the country.
Mm.
And so she's here, you know, trying to make this happen, trying to make that, bypassing protocol really skipping things. And she makes these transactions, pays into these accounts, and purchases flights and all of those things. And then she makes one big payment as a down payment as per the phone call, the meeting, because in the meeting there were some instructions that she got. And a few days later, her boss walks into the office and he says to her, please step with me into the boardroom. Oh, so she gets into the boardroom. And she recognizes someone from internal audit because they've done some audits in their department before.
Yeah.
And as she's there, immediately it dawns on her that was too good to be true. So that's one of the interesting cases where someone gets into a Teams meeting an online meeting, and you're seeing people from your organization, senior people from your organization, and you're talking to them, but it's actually just a combination of AI and thieves. So that's one of the interesting things of working remotely.
Muyoa. So it turns out it wasn't even the CEO.
No. Oh.
Did the lady ever, was she ever able to be redeemed from all of this?
Do you really want to hear the end of the story? So it's one of those sad things where someone loses his job and a lawsuit is open against them for bypassing a lot of procedures to get stuff done.
Oh, Miami, you said. Oh, the things we do. Jeez.
Yeah.
If you had to paint a picture of the average hacker, and I know this ties into what we said, but just for consciousness in case people missed it, what do they look like? Is it a kid in a hoodie, in a dark room, or something far more organized?
It is your 15, 16, 17-year-old son in the next room.
Sure.
That's how they look
like.
That
is sobering. That is sobering.
You know why it's your 16, 17-year-olds in the next room?
Mm.
It's because when they go to school, they want to brag about what they did. And oftentimes, there isn't really a limit to what they're doing on the internet.
And parents are none the wise. Like, it's just they're doing homework or they're on their game again. None the wise.
Parents are doing a fantastic job of providing the internet connectivity.
Yeah. Why do you think so many of us are casual about internet security until it's too late?
Because the perception of someone who's doing fraudulent online activity is someone who lives with their mother in the basement or go to backrooms, in the backrooms, in a South African context.
Yeah.
That's our perception. Someone who doesn't have a job, someone who wants to earn a living out of this. But we forget that it's mostly people who are trying sometimes to do this for fun.
For fun?
Yeah.
Some people have a very wicked idea of fun. Here, this poor lady lost her job now.
Unfortunately.
Jeez, man. Now let's talk about the everyday traps. Coffee shops, airports, hotels. Working on public Wi-Fi feels so harmless. But what actually happens behind the scenes when we connect?
Okay, so look, public Wi-Fi is great in the sense that have you seen the data prices?
Oh, listen, that's why you see people queuing at the benches there at the malls. Hectic.
Yeah. The data prices is just out of this world. Especially with expiring data. I mean, some of our CEOs for the mobile subscribers have made it very clear why our data expires. So it's we are finding ways to cope with the expenses of life. Life is expensive.
So
if we can do the bulk of what we do on someone's free Wi-Fi, well, great. And generally what tends to happen on there is the 16, 17-year-old is also there just fishing around and looking around for what they can do, because they go to Starbucks, they go to McDonald's, just to hang out with their friends.
Yeah.
And then they realize that's a good spot to get a few people who are doing some banking on there. Yeah. So you asked me a question in terms of what happens there. Well, what tends to happen is they're listening for, it's almost like eavesdropping on a conversation. So they're listening for that important conversation that you are having with your bank in terms of you are sharing your username and password with your bank in order to buy electricity.
Sure.
You're trying to buy electricity. Sure. You don't even have
You're
enough
doing
money
a noble thing.
You're doing a noble thing, but these guys are listening. These kids are listening to what you're doing, and then they're actually seeing your banking details. So they're waiting for you to get paid, and then when you get paid, the money gets transferred very quickly by buying store card vouchers, your app store, your Google store. And then once they've purchased a few of those, your Take a Lot vouchers, they sell them for like very cheap. So you buy a voucher for 1,000 rand and sell it for 200 rand.
Yeah, because for them, all of it is profit.
No, for them, they need to get rid of it quickly.
They need to get rid of it quickly.
Yeah, and exchange it for cash because they need the cash. They're not going to make any trace of what they're doing.
Yeah. Passwords.
Yeah.
I think I'm very guilty of this one. Everyone hates them. Me too. What's the danger in reusing the same one across multiple accounts?
Yeah, so long-term listeners will know what I've described passwords as. I'm just thinking of a new term because describing them as reusing underwear just, you know, it's a bit of a boring term. So passwords, in a nutshell, they need to be unique. You need to wear a fresh one for every website, for lack of a better word.
Is there a way to remember, though, because we log on to so many sites, we have so many subscriptions. Is there a way, maybe a nice, I watched a talk show some time back and this lady shared, but I forgot what she shared. Is there like a formula we can use? Hey,
There is a formula, but
tell me.
With the formula I'm going to share, you can't do that for every website. Otherwise, you're just going to go insane. So generally, what we recommend is you need to have a place that keeps all your passwords.
You know?
On the iPhone, you've got Keychain. On Samsung, you've got Samsung Pass. So that's what we call a password manager.
Yeah.
And most people think... saving your passwords in your browser is a password manager. That's an example of a password manager, but it's probably the worst one.
Also, the one that says "remember your password."
Yeah,
that
that's
little,
the worst one.
Note to push. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's an example, but the worst one. Why is it the worst one? It's because in our field, when I have physical access to your laptop, and sometimes we lose our laptops. There is software that you can get free off the internet. And with that software, you can restart your machine and just remove the password to access your laptop. Whether it's Windows or whether it's Mac or whether it's Linux, you can actually just do that. Now, once you've removed the password, you just open up the browser. You go to your favorite bank, which is probably Standard Bank or Absa, and there you go, your passwords are saved in the browser. That's why I'm saying it's the worst one, because we think, you know, the password to the laptop will protect us, but there's free software out there. So generally what we try and recommend to people is use a proper password manager, like the one that comes with your phone.
Yes.
For Samsung, for Apple devices, for Huawei, you've got the password manager there. It's free and you can use those passwords across different devices. That's one good thing about it. And there is also paid for options in terms of password managers. You've got 1Password, you've got Last Password. There's quite a few of them. And the formula to remember a good password is what we call passphrases.
Okay.
Right? So if we were to create a passphrase in a simple term, is I like Adventist Radio 2025, right? And that would be a password. It's a bit complex. It must not be something that, you know, you post on social media, like I like Adventist Radio, then everyone knows that.
Yeah.
And then the complexity of doing that is you can just take the first letter or the second letter of that sentence, and that becomes a unique password. So I, the letter I, would be an interesting one. Like, the letter L. Adventist Radio would be the letter A.
A-W-R.
2025.
Yeah.
There you are with a bit of a complex password. Now, every time you type it in, you just remember the phrase "I like Adventist Radio." But when you're typing it, ILA 2025 exclamation mark something.
I'm actually so on. Yeah, sorry. You can continue.
That tends to be an easier formula to follow, where you create your own passphrase. I would actually recommend you create a passphrase in your local language. So it's Zulu, Seswati, Tswana, Xhosa, Afrikaans, for those who speak Afrikaans. The reason is it's not easy for someone who's a hacker from outside South Africa to be able to guess those because they don't speak the language.
So good. I'm actually on my passwords app now and I'm seeing for a couple that exclamation mark telling me this is a reused password and it must be changed. Oh.
Yes, that's the password manager in the
problem. Yeah, yeah.
Most of your password managers also do that as well. Here's another interesting thing. And I think maybe you've done this with some of your guests who talk about credit reports. Your credit report from Experia or from wherever. Yes. So there is apps like, for example, ClearScore. Sorry, I'm not advertising for this, but it's useful info.
Yes.
So when you subscribe to ClearScore, they actually go and hunt for all your passwords that have been compromised and they tell you to change them. That's what I'm talking about. So why are they doing that? Because they know if your password for a bank is the same one that has been reused and it's been hacked, someone's going to access your bank and affect your credit score.
Yeah.
So they're trying to avoid that. Or someone's going to access your website and get personal identifiable information. It could be your email. Now, all of a sudden, I find, very interestingly enough, as people, we like emailing our IDs. So if I get access to your email, I've got your ID, your payslip, your proof of res, your last CV that you sent, your family members, you know, your marital status. I've got all of that information and it's very easy to actually perform identity theft. So that's one area where, you know, once you've done that, delete the particular email.
Yeah.
You know, because of identity theft. Identity theft then leads to someone, you know, opening a store account with your information. And that's where we see the consequences of a weak password on your email that holds a lot of personal identifiable information unique to your situation.
Yeah. I find with my phone, whenever I'm subscribing to perhaps a new platform or I'm getting a new app, it generates an app for me. It's so long. It's a lot of characters. And I'm not going to memorize that. Is that a good thing? And just to opt for the facial recognition instead of that long password?
That's a good thing.
Okay.
Because what developers of applications are coming across is that we know people that we don't like long passwords. We don't I don't even remember people around me's telephone numbers. How am I going to remember?
I still remember. I don't know them.
Yes. You know, when we lose our phones, it becomes very interesting how we don't remember phone numbers. But the whole idea around that is we are now moving into a different kind of authentication, which is around the identity of a person. So something that you are.
Yeah, biometrics.
And that tends to, that tends to be quite useful where, you know, Face ID, is it Face ID on the iPhone?
Yeah, it is.
It becomes useful. Your fingerprint becomes useful. But also Face ID is very scary in the sense that if someone's got your phone, you can actually just unlock it by looking at it.
That's the fear that I have. How much damage could a hacker really do with just an email address and 1 week password?
So, again, if we go back to your typical hacker, we're talking about a 15, 16, 17-year-old. It's a matter of how much bragging do they want to show their friends of what they did. Because some of those kids are just fine with accessing your email address. Some of those kids are not satisfied with that. They will want to go and show their friends that they can open a clothing account. Some of them want to show their friends that, you know, they can access your credit card and actually purchase store card vouchers. You know, one of the interesting things that comes around is when you go to a store, like let's say, for example, Checkers, and giving a lot of airtime to them. When you get there, let's say, for example, you have loaded a digital card on your phone.
Yeah.
I mean, what verification do they do to actually verify that you have permission to use that store card? They don't. You just tap your phone and you walk out. So this kid could basically have like a burner phone. A burner phone is a phone that once you have used it, you can throw it away. You don't really want your personal information there. So they could actually load up, you know, a digital card in some sort of app purchase wallet.
Sure.
I mean, all of these phones have it. And then just tap around. And then when they're happy, they throw the phone away. But no one's going to actually verify and say, hey, does that card you're using actually have your name on it? No, they're not.
Yeah. I want to
So the damage really depends on how far these guys want to go. It's funny enough, the professional criminals, they are not yet there.
They're not.
By the time they get there, we're in trouble.
Yo, way. Yeah, I wanted to talk about the human factor because after all, we are talking about vulnerability with like internet vulnerability with remote work. People are usually the weakest link. Almost in almost all these cases, in fact, in all of these cases, what are the most common mistakes you've seen remote workers make?
So the most common thing, the number one thing that remote workers make is overconfidence.
Overconfidence.
Where someone believes that could never happen.
Yo.
That story I gave you. Is someone honestly believing like, oh, come on, I'll tell if this is too good to be true. But the funny thing about us human beings, when we talk about our how we function in our minds, is we're constantly seeking approval one way or the other.
This is true.
And people who do this understand the idea around seeking approval. So for example, and this has got nothing to do with remote work, you see a pregnant lady carrying things or crying with children, the necessity for our mind in terms of seeking approval is we want to show people that we care, that we're a human being, and then we want to assist. And that tends to be a way to allow someone into a building who didn't have access. So remote workers are very, the biggest thing issue about them is overconfidence. That's the one, just overconfidence. These things could, this is for someone else, not me. So overconfidence is one of the biggest things. The second thing is the speed at which someone is asked to do something, right? So you get an SMS, you get an email, you get a phone call. This is too good to be true. We need to do this quickly. And before you can even process what you're doing, you're already, you know, putting your banking details and you're clicking submit. So speed, responding to speed, working remotely tends to be the second biggest issue. The third one is when you're in the office, you know, you tend to ask, lean over to your friend and say, hey, did they say that we were going to get bonuses this coming month? So that validation from your colleague is no longer there, right? That's the third thing. So you're on your own and the decision making is on your own. And here's something that comes very quickly and you must make the decision and you must... There's no one to bounce the ideas off. You're not going to start a Teams call and call someone.
Yeah.
It's just too much and you might not find the person. So that tends to be the third thing. And then the fourth one, and I'm going to stop with the fourth one, is websites that are very similar. So, for example, you have a website called Facebook.com, but the E is not an E in face.
Yes.
It's actually a special character E.
Yeah.
So you're looking at that and you're seeing what's happening on the website. You're not actually interrogating the actual words Facebook.com. You're looking at the page and like, oh, this looks like Facebook. And that tends to be a way that people get duped into things. And this happens also for emails as well. You get an email, but as you interrogate properly, you start to see, no, this is not an M for mother. This is actually two N's for Nelly.
Yeah.
And that's probably the one thing that's very common. So these are things that people know about us human beings, and they use them to good effect.
You know what I'm finding, though? At first, these phishing emails used to be laughably bad. Like you're saying, if you're paying attention, you'll pick it up. But now they're scaringly convincing. I'm finding that now they are starting to, you know their thing a little bit. What tricks are criminals using today that we should actually watch out for?
So one of the interesting things that comes across now is what we call generative AI.
Okay.
Where AI is able to generate new content,
yeah,
and make it believable.
Yeah.
So people are not going to an AI and saying, hey, draft me a scamming email. That the AI will say, you know, according to ethics, I cannot do that.
Mm.
So people are going to the AI and say, show me an example of an email where I request someone to do something. And the generative AI would type the English correctly in a convincing way. You just need to change one or two aspects and that's it. And so someone who doesn't have the vocabulary in terms of the business sense vocabulary can now all of a sudden speak business sense in an email. Or a child who has never experienced corporate life can all of a sudden craft up an email that is can be sent to an executive and it's well written.
Yeah.
So those are some of the things that threat actors related to phishing are actually doing. And AI is teaching them things that would normally take years to learn. So for example, you ask the AI, how do I protect myself against a phishing scam? And the AI would take you in detail in terms of how you could do that. But the person isn't asking for protection. The person is asking, how can I run a phishing scam? And the AI has just done that. So there's quite a lot that it would take someone years to learn that the AI is just giving to a person in a matter of minutes.
Yeah.
So those are some of the skills and the techniques that they're using. And oftentimes we see this a lot, especially with SASA grants, where if you want to see something, you want to see a lot of fake websites. A lot of fake websites. When I mean a lot, just search for SASA grant website. You will see so many fake websites. And you know how many adults don't tell the difference between all of those?
Yeah.
There's quite a lot where they just submit their details and someone takes that and goes and takes the money from SASA.
And, you know, I even shudder to say this, but it's such a good business model because there are so many of them. It looks like little money, and it is, but the volume. this is so bad. And what about organizations? How can companies protect themselves when their employees are scattered all over the world?
Yeah, so that's a very interesting question, because companies can do two things.
Yeah.
The first one is, the first and the most important is they need to educate their staff, irrespective of what qualifications or experience someone has.
Yeah.
They need to be educated. I mean, even us security professionals, we abide by a code of conduct where we have continuous development educational points that we need to earn to maintain the certifications that we do, because things change. So the first and the most important thing is educating the person. I always make this example. I grew up in a household. If my sisters are listening to this, I'm sorry. But I grew up in a household with two older sisters and one younger one. And irrespective of how much my father would sit in the living room, which is the exit door to the house, with visibility of the front yard, my sisters would still sneak out of the house to go to their young boyfriends at the time. And this was done by them, the boyfriends throwing a stone on top of the house, and my sisters knew. One stone means the older one, two stones means the younger one. So companies tend to overcompensate on buying tools, thinking that, you know what, this will protect us and this is sufficient. But the real thing is educating people. So the first and the most important thing is educate your people.
Yeah.
The consequences of clicking on an email. The pausing before making a major decision. Pause. Turn around, go ask someone or drink some water, come back. Irrespective of how quick the urgency with which you need to respond to something, take a moment and pause. Education is very important. The second one is you companies need to buy tools. You cannot say, well, our users are educated. We don't need to invest in technology to protect them. You need to invest in technology. Those two would minimize and reduce the risks of a company actually losing money. And we see this a lot. I mean, some of the cases we've investigated pro bono is conveyances. You know, someone is buying a property, they have an offer for purchase, and they've submitted the offer for purchase. And the conveyancer comes back and says, well, here's the bank accounts pay into this account. And someone just, you know, they're busy, they're doing quite a lot of things, and they just put the money into the wrong account. 3 days later, the conveyancer, the real one, calls them and says,
our money.
You haven't paid.
Yes.
And you have signed the offer for purchase. You can't back down after that. So that tends to be quite an important thing where people need to really pay attention to what they're doing. Pause. You know, if you're going to make a large payment into an account, call the person and confirm the bank account. But also at the same time with AI.
it can sound like them.
It can sound like them.
So even the number can be cloned. Guys.
Yes. Gone are the days when we used to go to the bank and verify the owners of the bank account. But there are steps that people can do. And I think people in finance understand there are steps that they can do to actually make sure that the payment goes into the right account. Sometimes when I make large transactions, I pay one rand. And then I check with people, is that the money? Did you arrive in the right account? And when they say yes, I say, great. And then I can make the large transaction. It is annoying, but it helps.
What's one myth about internet security you wish people would just drop?
It affects someone else, not me.
I'm too small to be a target.
This is for someone with millions in the account.
Yes.
If I were to tell you how many accounts people have access to and they're just waiting for that one large deposit into your account before they can actually go after the money.
You know what's stressing me about what you're saying? So I used to work at the bank, right? And we used to have I don't know if I should call it a system, but it is a system called NADO. And what NADO would do is if on the 25th, your debit order's for the 25th, right? And you don't have money. It's like, okay, sharp. But they don't stop tracking your accounts. On the 26th, if there's money, it'll be the first to take their money, whatever that service provider is. If it's the 27th, they'll go. So you're telling me that these hackers and these scammers now have NADO for their scams?
Yeah. Well, you don't really need NADO. I mean, like we mentioned, They have access to your email, for example. They're not going to do anything. They'll just create a rule within your email that when a certain email comes in, it's forwarded automatically to them. Then they know.
You're stressing me.
Yeah, and they know. And unfortunately, this becomes an inconvenience on the day you actually need.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Let's wrap up by giving remote workers just 3 rules to follow in order to stay safe. You stressed
Not
me
10
enough.
Commandments. I've got a list of 10 commandments.
Please give me, because I'm already stressed. Maybe the 10 commandments will give me some relief.
No, I'm joking. I think 3 rules should be sufficient. I think if we were to tell remote workers how to protect themselves, the first one is drop the overconfidence. Completely drop it. Right. Understand that anyone can be a victim of this. Even people in my field who are well specialized can be victims. I mean, there is a guy called Troy Hunt.
Yeah.
Troy Hunt is a very senior cybersecurity professional, someone who speaks at conferences, is a big shot. And he fell victim to a phishing email.
I think you once told us the story.
Yes. Anyone can be a victim. That's the first thing. And being a victim doesn't mean that you are stupid or anything. It can happen. So drop the overconfidence that I know what I'm doing. And this can't happen to me. So that needs to drop. The second one is educate yourself. Listen to programs that talk about security. And try and implement one thing in there. Just one thing. It will improve. Try and do it well. Just one thing. And then the third one would be, let me see which are the things important. I would say don't take things for granted as the third rule.
Yeah.
So if you see a notification on your phone, right, don't take it for granted. I'm going to deal with that later on. Or if your bank is trying to call you and like, hey, we're not sure about this. And you're like, no, don't worry. My account is fine. Don't take things for granted. I think notifications, limits that you set on your banking apps, identity theft, don't take stuff for granted. I think maybe those 3 would be a summation of what I would suggest to remote workers.
You know what? I'm learning and realizing that sure, remote work has changed the game. I mean, we've gained flexibility, we've gained freedom, but these criminals have also gained access. And the difference between being a victim and being secure often comes down to simple choices like our passwords, the Wi-Fi networks we connect to, and most importantly, and I think every time we have a conversation with you, you hash on this. Awareness, education, knowing exactly what is going on, so that when these attacks come, you're here, your eyes are wide open. And you know, you showed us tonight that internet security isn't just for techies, it's for everybody, it's survival for anyone that is working online. So then the question is not will you be targeted, it's when, and I think most importantly, will you be ready when the attack comes? Because everybody was a victim. Muyawa, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure talking to you. You are a well of wisdom. I really appreciate our time together.
It's a pleasure. One last thing. When you suspect that there's fraudulent activity, please go and open a police case. Yes. My organization that I work for, which I will not name.
Okay.
is in the process of educating our police officers in terms of how to actually handle these type of cases. So go open a police case and where possible, they will investigate and they will try and assist you in terms of finding the perpetrators. So open a police case. Yes.
Yeah. let's hope our police actually do take action, because, hey, our cases that have piled up there in those stations. But anyway, thank you for the good work you're doing, and thank you for this conversation.
It's been a pleasure.
Cheers. And with that, I am Nompumelelo Mbonane, and I hope you have just made sense of your business. Fresh Mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.